Welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the big issue is abortion rights. We had a whole show planned, and it was one of those weeks where we had to throw everything out at the last minute because this landmark, huge political earthquake happened. The Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade, getting rid of the federal constitutional right to an abortion, and putting the issue back to the states. California doubling down as a sanctuary state for abortion. But so many other states will be outlawing abortion very soon. So we talk about it this week with the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood in California, Jody Hicks. We also talk about it with the CEO of the Family Council, a pro-life or anti-abortion rights organization, depending on how you want to say it, Jonathan Keller. And later, some analysis from Areva Martin and Brian Goldsmith, two of our favorites, who are political pundits, who both happen to be lawyers as well. But we start this week with some of the big names reacting to this. In a moment, we'll hear from the Attorney General. But first, we'll hear from some of the biggest, most prominent names in politics. There are few issues more emotional or personal than abortion rights.
No business as usual.
At the White House, President Joe Biden blasting the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade.
With Roe gone, let's be very clear. The health and life of women in this nation are now at risk.
On Capitol Hill, Speaker Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco pointing out that the three justices appointed by President Trump made the difference.
Because of Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and the Republican Party, their supermajority in the Supreme Court, American women today have less freedom than their mothers.
Former Vice President Mike Pence, who helped appoint those justices, says in a tweet, quote, life won. And House Republicans are celebrating, led by Kevin McCarthy of Bakersfield.
Americans celebrate this historic victory because we know it will save the lives of millions of children and it will give families hope.
Some Democrats now say they want more justices on the court. Among them, Burbank's Adam Schiff.
We ought to expand the court and unstack the court so that the court is more reflective of the views of the American people.
Congress could codify a federal right to an abortion into law, but don't currently have enough votes to do so.
This fall, Roe is on the ballot.
Reproductive freedoms are under attack.
California Governor Gavin Newsom releasing a video with the governors of Oregon and Washington expressing unity.
The West Coast United States is going to stand strong.
You'll fight like hell to protect your rights and your safety.
The governor joining his wife and the state's top leaders in Sacramento.
This is insane. This is toxic masculinities at work in the highest court in the country.
Shortly before the decision was announced, I was joined by California's Attorney General, Rob Bonta, who talked about California's plan forward.
California will continue to be a place where those who seek reproductive health care can receive it, and I'll do everything in my power as the chief law enforcement officer of the state of California to ensure that continues to be true.
Abortions will now be illegal in the states where millions of women live. Will California pay for those women to come here to California and get an abortion here?
The short answer is that there is a bill and a budget request to do just that, a fund for reproductive health care for individuals, including those who are out of state, who are going to be hurt first and hurt worst. We know it's our low-income communities, our disadvantaged communities, our vulnerable communities, our communities of color, who will not be able to turn to other alternatives.
What do you say to people who think that it's inappropriate for the state to use money for that, that maybe they agree that people should have the freedom to choose whatever they want, but state funds shouldn't be used on that?
I say that the representatives of the state of California who represent the people of the state have spoken loud and clear that this is an appropriate use of funds. It's consistent with their values. It's consistent with who we are, the laws of our state, the values of our state.
Joining us now is Jody Hicks. She is the president and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California. She's probably worked on this issue more than anybody else in the entire state. Jody, welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
First off, your sort of instinctual gut emotional reaction to hearing this news about Roe being overturned?
You know, I mean, obviously we're devastated. I think we've been working towards knowing that this day would come since September. Having said that, it's an impossible time to prepare for. And so it still comes very much as a gut punch. And you know, it's a sad day for anyone that really for humanity.
Yet it is, as you mentioned, one that you've been preparing for a long time. So what's the plan now for the people of California? What changes in this state?
We have 15 bills working their way through the legislature. Our governor and leaders have proposed over $125 million in investments for California to ensure that we're prepared for what has happened this week. We know that 26 states are poised to ban some type of abortion in the states that across the country. We know that that affects over 30 million women. That means they'll have to travel outside of the state they live in order to receive care. And so we just have been working to ensure that in California, our values will remain, our abortion access will remain, our doors will remain open, and will be that haven state for anybody that needs care, whether you live in California or you have to travel here.
There are tens of millions of people around the country that are celebrating this decision, that feel like life has not been protected, that innocent babies have been murdered for generations, and that this is a good thing. What do you say to those people?
Look, what I say is we need to do everything we can to ensure that our world is really one where if you're a pregnant person, you have everything you need. We will see a public health impact from this decision this week, and every public health expert agrees on that part of it. Maternal mortality in this country is at a crisis rate that's unacceptable, especially when you compare it to the rest of the world. Those numbers will continue to go up.
And lastly, what are you anticipating in terms of a surge? Do you have any guesses in terms of how many people you're expecting to come here? What does your plan look like?
Well, I can tell you what we know just from Texas. We know that since one state has instituted a ban of since September, we've been seeing an average of 1,500 patients a month coming from out of state. So we expect that to increase. I think it's impossible to wrap your mind around what a post-Roe reality looks like when this is generations have enjoyed that protection for almost 50 years. So we're doing everything we can to ensure that organizations that provide either the care or the outreach help to practical support that people need right now, that they are invested in a way that people can access care they need.
Well, Jody Hicks from Planned Parenthood California, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your views on what I know is a difficult week.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us now with a different perspective is Jonathan Keller, the president and CEO of the California Family Council. Jonathan, welcome to The Issue Is.
Happy to be with you. Thank you so much, Alex.
So this is a moment that you and others have been working for years. Just on a personal, emotional level, what does it mean to you that Roe has been overturned?
Well, it's interesting that you actually start with that. It's kind of surreal, to be honest. I started my involvement with the pro-life community, the pro-life issue, as a high school student. I was 14 years old. I was a freshman. And I had some friends that invited me to go and pray outside of an abortion clinic. And it was something that it kind of took over my life. I ended up going to school, Christian school, ended up starting working with a pro-life organization where I've now been in this work professionally for almost 20 years. And I, in some ways, I don't know that I ever thought we were actually going to get to this day. I mean, you always work for it and you believe that it's possible, but it's almost, I'm still kind of in shock that it's actually here.
Now, you know the counter argument, which is, great that you have that perspective. Totally respect your beliefs. I've got a different belief. Why shouldn't I be able to have a choice to do what I want? What do you say to that?
Setting aside the theology and the philosophy, just looking at this as the fact that you have lives that are in the womb, biologically they are human, and biologically they are alive, and wanting to say that they are worthy of protection and respect.
If what you're wanting goes forward, and it is going forward now in a lot of other states, there are going to be mothers that have babies that don't want them. And what happens to those kids? And who takes care of those kids? And how many people who are advocating for this position are willing to adopt those kids or invest in those kids?
That is a phenomenal question. I mean, I won't just say that's a $1 million question. That is a $1 billion question. That is something that I think every person who calls themselves pro-life really has to grapple with, and we really have to step up to the plate and put our money where our mouth is. I think that for a long time, you have seen pro-life advocates that are doing that. We have across the country over 3,000 pregnancy resource centers that are working to provide hope and support and resources to women that are facing an unplanned pregnancy. We've seen women and families that step up and meet the needs, whether it's through foster care or through adoption. But Alex, you're right. This is something that we need to do a better job of. And I'm not just talking about liberals. I'm not talking about Democrats. I'll call out Republicans. I'll call out even people of faith. I think that we as a society need to do a better job of going to where the most vulnerable people in our society are and trying to reach out and meet those needs wherever possible.
So one of the things that California is now considering doing is essentially creating a fund of $125 million that would help people from other states where abortions are banned come here to this state to get an abortion here. What do you make of that proposal? And my presumption is, what's your plan to fight it?
Well, unfortunately, Alex, that is absolutely one of the worst proposals I think that California has introduced this entire year, because not only are we talking about trying to incentivize women or provide opportunities for women to have abortions here in the state of California, but in a very real way, we are recruiting women from around the country to come here and have abortions. In fact, Gavin Newsom's Future of Abortion Council proposed that if that type of policy goes into effect, we could see abortion rates from out-of-state patients increase not by hundreds of percent, but even by thousands of percent here in California. So I think what I would love to see, we do have a historic budget surplus here in the state of California. I would love to see us use that, use our world-class medical facilities, the huge amount of money we have, to actually meet the needs of women and families. We could do so much more in terms of leading the nation in providing prenatal care, in terms of providing reduced or subsidized labor and delivery. Providing ways for families to afford to adopt children if it's through the foster care system. I think that there are a lot of opportunities that California can have in leading the nation. I just don't think that we should be leading the nation in turning us into a taxpayer-funded abortion sanctuary.
Jonathan Keller, the president and CEO of the California Family Council, thank you so much for sharing your views.
Thanks very much.
Our thanks to Jonathan. Now to our panel. Our panel is here in studio for the first time in a long time in our new studio. Of course, the big issue this week is abortion rights. With us, Areva Martin, who is an attorney and activist and author and everything else you can say with A. Good to have you back. And Brian Goldsmith is back with us as well, political consultant, former journalist, and all-around smart guy. Good to have both of you back with us. What a week, Areva, both as an attorney and as an activist, this Roe decision, your big takeaway.
I'm really, like so many women around this country, in some ways speechless, Alex, to eviscerate 50 years of women's right to control their reproductive health in, like, with the stroke of a pen is really pretty amazing. To have those six jurists, justices, make that decision, even though the majority of the country favors women's rights to abortions, women's rights to make their own choices, our bodies, our choices. It's really quite stunning. And to have it be six Republicans, we know this has been a plan. This is not something that happened overnight. This has been a very concerted and methodical plan to get us to this day, and we are here.
Something Mitch McConnell has worked for years on, and something that Donald Trump promised and delivered on, and proof, Brian, that 2016 election was so important in so many aspects of American life.
Well, some of us were saying it at the time. This is a very sad day because this is not the end of abortion. This is the end of safe and legal abortion for so many women, particularly in the 13 states with trigger laws. This is a new radicalism in the country overturning 50 years of precedent.
So, Brian, you do the raw politics thing from a cynical perspective. How does this impact this election? Governor Newsom has said this is the defining issue of this year, but we know there are a lot of other big issues, too.
Well, the question to me is, does it overturn all of the existing forces that were pushing toward a big Republican victory in November, the economy, gas and groceries, dissatisfaction with the president? And does this and the gun issue overtake those? Sort of in the way that 9/11, 20 years ago, overtook dissatisfaction with George W. Bush to give his party an unprecedented victory in the midterms. That's the kind of push that the Democrats would need.
And does it?
I don't know yet. It's too soon to say. I think it has the possibility of awakening the sleeping giant of Democrats who turn out for presidential elections but not for midterm elections. That is what would be required.
I think it's huge. I think, Brian, this is going to be that thing which catalyzes and galvanizes low propensity voters, young people, people of color, progressives. I think we're going to see them voting in the midterm elections in ways that we haven't seen in many, many years. But that, the Roe v. Wade decision, I've already heard from so many young women saying, look, I've got to now decide what state I want to move to for college, where I want to move to raise my family, to start my career, because what that state does around abortions is going to be important to me.
Well, there are a lot of men with a lot at stake here, too. And in fact, the data suggests that young men are even more pro-choice than young women. And so the question is, this is a test for the mainstream majority of the country, the two-thirds of the country that says that they don't want Roe v. Wade overturned. Is this the voting issue for them, or is this just something they complain about?
A quick pause. Our next up for our panel, a discussion about gas. Here's the President of the United States.
Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you are paying for the product.
President Biden says he wants to temporarily pause the federal gas tax, but Democrats in Congress don't seem all that interested in that. With the price of gas and groceries through the roof, the president's approval rating continues to plummet into the mid-30s. Back with our panel, Areva Martin and Brian Goldsmith. Brian, what can the president do about this?
The sad thing is he can't do very much. He has an agenda that's been stalled in Congress that would reduce the cost of prescription drugs, that would do something about the deficit, that would put more money in people's pockets, and he should do whatever it takes with Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema to get that passed. But beyond that, his tools are pretty limited.
But the bipartisan deal-making guy can't convince his own party to pass that.
It's been a challenge. And, you know, the Democratic Party, unlike the Republicans under Donald Trump, are a broad coalition with a lot of ideological diversity. And history suggests that, you know, inflation hits 100% of the people. Unemployment hits the people who are unemployed. And so it's a much tougher political issue to overcome. And the medicine for inflation also hurts the overall economy.
I mean, how much of a political issue is this?
I think it's an issue, but I think it's been blown out of proportion. I think people, if the Democrats, if we can get our messaging right on this and make sure people understand that it is not the president's fault, that he is not in control of what's happening internationally, that the, you know, Russians' invasion of Ukraine is also at stake here or at play here, and focus on those things this president has done, the creation of jobs, the money that people had in their pockets, you know, when Biden came into office, he doesn't get enough credit for that.
When it comes to gas, that's in people's face every single day. Every time they drive, they see that price right there.
Brian, the other problem, I would say, history suggests that when inflation is over 4 and unemployment is under 4, which is where we are right now, there is always a recession within 1 to 2 years, and that is a political dynamite for the Democrats.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about Governor Newsom. One last segment now coming with our panel. Let's talk about Governor Newsom and his recent potential presidential run. Here's him with us recently.
What is going on in the Democratic Party nationwide? I cannot answer that question.
Governor Newsom continues to double down on the sentiment expressed to us here on The Issue Is a few weeks ago. Recently, The Atlantic, The New York Times, Politico, all writing articles about whether he is preparing for a presidential run. So, back with our panel, Reeva Martin, Brian Goldsmith. Brian, is he running already? What's going on with him?
He's trying to run, and I think his moves are too cute by half. Even some Democrats who are dissatisfied with the president don't appreciate the governor of the biggest state coming out and doing this. Well, the Democratic Party sucks, but the leadership of the Democratic Party is great, sort of disingenuous two-step. I don't think this is working for him, and there are other better ways for him to improve and build his national profile, like doing a really good job as governor.
And I'd like to see him put his money where his mouth is and endorse Karen Bass. If he wants to show Democrats what they should be doing across the nation, that is supporting other Democrats. We got two people in the runoff for mayor for the city of Los Angeles, biggest city, second biggest city in the country, and one is a lifelong true Democrat, and that's Karen Bass.
Let's talk about what you mentioned, the mayor's race in L.A. We know now Karen Bass finished ahead of Caruso in the primary. Next steps going forward, I mean, is she a heavy front runner, you think, going forward? Do you think Caruso's got much of a shot?
I think she was and continues to be a front runner, a heavy front runner, as you call it.
And lastly, Brian, state of the race, Rick Caruso, does he have a shot? And if so, how does he do it?
He's the underdog. He's got to establish himself as more than a Democrat in name only. And he's got to capture the mantle of change candidate. He's got to position Karen Bass as more of the same. And he's got to make himself an acceptable center-left change agent, which is a lift.
Our thanks to Brian and Reeva. Now a podcast extra, a segment that we recorded on Thursday of this week and intended to run this week, but didn't get to because we ran out of time on TV for abortions. We talked with Congressman Adam Schiff of Burbank, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and member of the January 6th committee about what happened there this week. Here's that interview.
A lot of people whispering in his ear, feeding him these conspiracy theories and allegations.
Former Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue testifies before the January 6th committee this week about President Trump in the days before January 6th. Adam Schiff is a member of the January 6th committee and is a Democrat from Burbank. Congressman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good to be with you.
For people that didn't watch every second of this testimony, what is the most important takeaway from the week?
Well, we had two big hearings this week. The first profiled largely Republican elected officials, Republican House Speaker in Arizona, Republican Secretary of State in Georgia, who talked about the pressure campaign put on them, how they refused to violate their oath, how they wouldn't simply recalculate the votes in the case of Georgia, where the president had asked the Secretary of State to find 11,780 votes that didn't exist. And then in the second hearing, it was top Justice Department officials talking about how they were being pushed to embrace these false claims of fraud to the point where the president was ready to fire the top leadership and replace it with an environmental lawyer, an unqualified lawyer from within the department who would simply do his bidding. And it was the threat of mass resignation of basically all the top leadership of the department that was the only thing that stopped the president from abusing the Department of Justice as part of that plot.
That lawyer you're talking about is Jeffrey Clark. We want to play more of Richard Donahue talking about a conversation he had with Jeff Clark about the Justice Department's meddling.
He was defensive and, similar to his earlier reaction when I said this is nothing less than Justice Department meddling in an election. His reaction was, I think a lot of people have meddled in this election.
Jeff Clark's home was raided by the FBI this week. Did you have any heads up on that? And what did you make of that?
I certainly had no heads up about it, and I wouldn't really expect to. The Justice Department operates quite independently. In terms of what to make about it, I think that the Justice Department certainly seems to have a sense of urgency now about these events. Mr. Clark, as we demonstrated in the hearing this week, was involved in trying to get the Justice Department to send a letter to Georgia, among other states, making claims that the Justice Department was concerned about serious allegations of fraud, All illegitimate, all nothing the department does. It would have been a corruption of the department. And it just goes to show you that, you know, sadly, you can always find someone willing to do the dirty work, willing to violate their oath of office.
A lot of the Republicans have not exactly argued with the substance of what you're saying. Their basic point is like, who cares? There are more important issues. There are those who say that gas and inflation is way more important. Polls seem to show that. The president called for a federal gas pause. Do you agree with that? And should the state do that?
Well, you know, a couple of things. First of all, for Republicans who say, who cares? They're basically saying, who cares that the former president, the head of their party, tried to overturn the presidential election? Who cares if laws were violated? Well, I care. I think most Americans care. They don't want to see us, our democracy turned into some kind of authoritarian regime. So people do care about this. Now, they also care about their pocketbook. And yes, I think the federal gas tax should be suspended. Weeks ago, I proposed a bill that would do that. And it would pay for it with a windfall profits tax on oil companies. Oil companies right now are gouging us. That is accounting for a much bigger part of these price hikes than the federal gas tax, which is about 18 cents a gallon.
So if you believe in that and President Biden believes in that, why aren't the other Democrats on board? Is this going to get done?
There are a number of members with different proposals for how we ought to accomplish this. So whether it'll be my bill or look like my bill or be a different approach, I can't say. I can't tell you this is what I favor. But I agree with the premise of your question, Alex. If it's good enough for the president and Adam Schiff, that ought to be good enough, right?
All right. Let's end. We always like to end with something fun this week. How was your birthday week?
I had to work until about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night on my birthday. So there wasn't much celebrating on the actual day. But Eve is taking me to see To Kill a Mockingbird, the play. So I'm very excited about that. And that will be my birthday present.
In a different interview with me this week, you said that your favorite movie of all time is The Big Lebowski, which surprised a lot of us. So we end this week not with music, but with a special clip from The Dude for you.
The Dude abides.
The Dude abides.
Our thanks to the congressman and our apologies to him that was not able to make it on the TV version, but bonus points for listening to the podcast version, where you got a lot of bonus material today, an extra like 25 minutes of material this week or more. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you'll follow me in social media, send me comments, let me know what you think of the show, rate, subscribe, tell your friends about it. And have a great week or weekend wherever you're listening to this. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.